And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we break into a Thursday. Gary, how are you?
Doing good. Some of the things we'll be talking about, even the liberal media just can't get off of this topic, and we just know why that they can. We know why they cannot get off this topic, because they know how politically bad it is for the president. This is MSNBC yesterday.
Would you advise him to ask the president to consider visiting East Palestine?
Well, the president will make his own decisions about where he goes.
I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
I don't want to touch that. You deal with that one. I don't want to deal with that. What are you,
nuts? I'd rather actually get closer to the chemical spill than that question. But you know, the president said a few days ago that, you know, he didn't have any plans to go.
No. He's not going to go.
Because here's the thing. If I were his advisor, I would tell him, well, you can't go now.
Yeah, you can't.
It's way too late. That would be like, you know, Bush going to visit New Orleans after Katrina in 2010.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll get to that coming up. Plus, the Attorney General, a little bit under the gun yesterday from Republicans.
Attorney General Garland, let me just ask you, does your department have a problem with anti-Catholic bias?
So we'll get to that coming up. Yep. How he answered some of those questions. I looked at this and said, let's learn you something here.
Okay.
You know, we talk about that the difference between constructionist judges, that the media wants to portray that there's conservative judges versus liberal judges. Mm-hmm. And that's not the reality of what goes on the vast majority of the time. I'm not saying that you will never find a constructionist judge if they're a conservative that doesn't let conservative bias get involved in it. You and I there are rare cases when it happens, but we bring it up and point it out to you when that does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at almost, you know, who was a, you know, pure constructionist who said it would be arrogant for me, to do it. It would be the late. I got mind blank.
Scalia.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Justice Scalia. He would have been the closest.
Yeah.
We have seen differences. We saw differences between Scalia and Thomas. Mm-hmm. When we said Thomas is showing his conservative bias,
yeah,
and not the constructionist viewpoint. And so
right.
We have actually
right.
brought that up before on the show. But and so it's really 99% of the time, it's the constructionists. They are the judges that say, we don't make these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Congress does. You know, this isn't about what we think personally. And we had talked about the CNN article the other day on the whole college loan thing, where you had an article in CNN talking about, well, these judges, they don't live the life of somebody who has to pay for college. They don't know what it's like. They're part of the elite. None of that matters. That's not the question. Because that's stupid. That's it's like we used to get calls, and we would talk about a legal issue. Well, are you a Supreme Court judge? No. Well, then you can't talk about it. As if only Supreme Court judges are allowed to discuss the law, that the Constitution and the law is above the understanding of anybody who is just a regular citizen. And, of course, that's hogwash.
Yeah, and the caller is obviously also not a Supreme Court judge or justice and called us to talk about it.
Yes, I mean, we've dealt with that before, and it's like, well, then if you're not an electrician, you shouldn't be talking about the grid or renewable fuels and alternative forms of energy.
If you're a virologist, quit talking about COVID at all.
Unless you are one, you're saying.
Unless you're a virologist, yeah.
Right.
Quit talking about it.
I was just, right before we went on the air, I saw this and I go, well, this is a great opportunity to point out, you know, the bias and the difference of where the liberal justices will attempt to make a legal point and fail miserably. And it was Sotomayor. I remember when Sotomayor got caught, you know, remember that it was her that got caught at that conference, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were recording, and she was talking about legislating from the bench, and she felt that was essentially what their role was. And then she realized that the mic was on and said, I mean, I know we're not supposed to talk about that, and tried to walk it back, but that's exactly what they believe.
So what's going on here with Sotomayor, and we'll get to the actual text of it in just a moment, is the fact, and the left tries to do it all the time, well, the Supreme Court, why is the Supreme Court judging whether student loans can be forgiven or not? Mm-hmm. It's not the judges' roles are not. That's not what's going on here.
No,
the judges are in here because the executive order has been challenged as unconstitutional. That it should be Congress that should spend this kind of money, and it is clear the president cannot. The president, by executive order, or by attempting in a very weak way to tie one law, the early 2000 Heroes Act, to 9/11 that was specific for first responders, and apply it here is totally not within his power to do so. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court is simply saying, he can't do that. Congress can. Yeah. It was the same thing on the abortion issue. Mm-hmm. Well, Congress is deciding the Supreme Court is deciding abortion. No, they're not. In fact, they specifically stated, we can't tell you where life begins. That's up to society. We're simply telling you that we can't make the decision as to when life begin, and neither can the previous Supreme Court. When they did it, it's up to Congress and the people of the United States to make that decision, which would be through the legislative branch of the states or Congress, because that was another misnomer. When the Supreme Court did it, Congress can't. Congress could pass a law on abortion.
Well, it's funny because that's exactly what the Supreme Court said. It's not our job. There are other ways to do this.
Right.
And AOC actually came out after the fall of Roe v. Wade, and she said, you know, she slammed the Supreme Court and said, this is why our elected representatives need to do something about it. It was like, that's exactly what the court thinks.
And the responsibility of a judge is to interpret the law.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what she said, addressing Nebraska State Solicitor General James Campbell, who argued against the Biden administration. Sotomayor said, quote, what you're saying is now we're going to give judges the right to decide how much aid to give them. instead of the person with the expertise and the experience, the Secretary of Education, who's been dealing with educational issues and the problems surrounding student loans. Uh-huh. We're going to take it upon ourselves instead of leaving that question in the hands of the person who has experience with those questions. Well, now, yeah. Is that disingenuous or what?
Yeah, it's like the teacher that was at the meeting, and it went viral over the last week or so. And she was saying, these parents don't have the education that I have. I have a master's degree. How dare they want to get involved in their kids' education?
But that is a key understanding that Sotomayor doesn't give a damn about the Constitution.
No.
If you want, and this is absolutely clear. And then this, I've been reading this. Charles Cook laid it out in National Review and made the exact same points. I'll just read the points he made, which would be our points that we've been making for decades. This is a nonsense argument from Sotomayor. First off, the question before the court is not how much aid to give students. The question before the court is whether the statute it is examining, the 2003 HEROES Act, confers upon the executive branch the power to do what it's trying to do. If it does, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yep.
The amount of aid doesn't enter into that calculation. Neither does the level of expertise and experience exhibited by the incumbent Secretary of Education. That secretary could have the most sparkling mind in American history, or he could be a total moron. And in both cases, the issue before the court would be the same. Does he have the power to do it? There is no provision within the United States Constitution that accords unlimited powers to bureaucrats simply because some people consider them to be well-credentialed. As for Sotomayor's suggestion that by superintending this statutory matter, the court is taking upon itself to set policy instead of leaving that decision in the hands of the person who has expertise with these questions, that too is absolutely not. As was noted, Elena Kagan made this argument in last year's EPA case. The court appoints itself instead of Congress or an expert agency, the decision maker on climate policy, Kagan wrote in the dissenting opinion. I cannot think of many things more frightening. And that was a bunch of hogwash as well. In that controversy as this one, the court was not appointing itself as a decision maker. It was deciding where the decision-making power lies. Was it in Congress, which the plaintiffs claimed and had not yet legislated on the issue, or was it in a federal agency that had been empowered by Congress to execute congressional legislation? In that case, the court determined it was Congress. Congress makes the law, not the executive branch. And this shows you again, you know, we've been on this little narrative this week about every major issue out there the left lies about. Sotomayor is lying about this.
Well, if the Secretary of Education were still Betsy DeVos, would she say the same thing?
No.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. No. And we would be saying the same. We would hold
it
the
wouldn't
same
hold
opinion
for Betsy DeVos,
right,
with us either.
Right.
Because the authority isn't with the Secretary of Education
or the president
or in the executive branch. It's with, right, the legislative branch. And if they want to do that, then they can do that.
And it's that simple. But that, understand, you know, they may try to use fancy words, but it's still the same thing. Sotomayor in that case, Kagan in the other case with the EPA versus the coal industry, both are lying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both are lying about what it is about, and they're smart enough to know that they're lying about it.
Right. Well, because the only motive is to get emotional support.
Right.
I mean, you're trying to get people fired up about something so that there is some kind of political will one way or the other. You're not going to change the legal argument. As much as they try to get away from the legal argument.
But it's something that we've talked about, and I just thought that Charles, you know, Cook hit it. And
yeah.
You and I have been talking about this for decades.
Yeah. Yeah.
And pointing out when it happens, and I'm so glad that he put that quote in there.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's perfect, because
right,
it shows you very simply and precisely where the justices like Sotomayor and Kagan will absolutely lie about what the issue is.
Right.
Because they can't defend it by law, so they lie about what's going on.
No, I mean, it's very simple. This should be a 9-0 decision. Yeah, it's very clear.
Yep.
You have to go out of your way to try and make this one happen.
Well, you have to lie about it.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
It's not always easy to spring back from the harsh days of winter to warmer months ahead. From de-icing chemicals to hidden debris underneath snow and ice, winter conditions can do serious damage to your truck. Here's a must-do maintenance check to help you minimize downtime and stay rolling. Inspect your brake hoses, linings, and slack adjusters for any wear and tear. Listen for any air leaks that may have resulted from moisture freezing up in the system. Check slack adjusters for proper stroke and lubrication. And check your brake linings or pads to ensure proper thickness. This report is brought to you by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. You know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6. And help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So you may wonder why justices like Sotomayor and Kagan lie about the law and lie about, for example, what the student transfer of loans from people who signed a contract to take out that loan and receive the benefit to people who did not sign the contract and received no benefit of that loan. You wonder, why do they lie when legally it's so easy to point it out? Why would they lie like that? They can't defend. In a debate, they couldn't defend it.
No.
She could not, in a debate, defend it.
No.
But why do they feel that they can do it? Well, we'll go back to the survey. And the latest one was taken in late September of last year. Less than half of U.S. adults can name all three branches of government. One in four, 25%, could not name any. If you can't name the three branches of government, which, only 47% could name all three branches of government,
25% right, couldn't name one.
Couldn't name one. And so that means that you had 56%. 56% could not name all three branches of government.
Mm.
You know,
right.
And 25% couldn't name any,
right,
which means the majority of Americans live in the United States of America, and they have no idea how the hell their country works.
Well, I mean, Ilhan Omar was out there in front of the Supreme Court, you know, the other day, and she's got, you know, her followers out there. Do we think that the president has the authority or has the power or should be, you know, forgiving student loans? And everyone, yes. I was like, well, based on what? You're standing in front of the Supreme Court. It's not a legal argument. They can get away with it because they know that nobody is going to be able to put two and two together on the legal argument. If you can't even name the three branches of government, then how do you know separation of powers?
You don't. And that shows you and that's what they're depending on. They're depending on the willful ignorance of the American public.
Yeah.
My God, I've known the three branches of government. It had to be in seventh grade or before.
I don't even know all my vowels yet, and I know the three branches of government. I know sometimes why on the vowels.
Think about this. The majority of American citizens have no idea how their government actually works. They have no idea the basis of the Constitution of the United States. Yet, they want to get rid of it. I can guarantee those people that say that the Constitution is antiquated, the majority of those people, the vast majority, do not know the three branches of government and cannot tell you what the separation of powers is and why it exists. They have no idea.
No.
That's how bad it is in the United States, and that's why these leftist Supreme Court judges can get away with lying to the American public.
The fourth branch of government. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So when you see, because this is the polling from last September,
mm-hmm,
is the latest that we have. And if you've been a longtime listener to the show, you know we've done this for the longest time when we talk about why the liberal justices can get away with lying to the American people about what the law is, and they know they're lying.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, we gave you the example of Sotomayor with the college loan case, you know, in front of them right now. And the vast majority of the people don't even understand the three branches of government, so she can sit there and say whatever she wants, and half the country has no idea what's going on. So when I see this, because this is funny, because this is right beneath it. 56% of Americans have no idea how the country runs. They have no idea what the three branches, they cannot name the three branches of government. If you can't name the three branches of government, you don't know why they exist. And as you pointed out, they don't understand the separation of powers.
Mm-hmm.
Then right beneath it, over half of Americans disapprove of the Supreme Court. Well, yeah, because they don't even know how it fits in to the three branches of government and the separation of powers.
You can't possibly know the right purpose of the Supreme Court.
Right.
If you don't know the three branches
of government. Exactly. You don't know what their role is. And that's what we're dealing with in this country. Complete and total ignorance, which is why, again, and I think it's important to say, why liberal justices are so willing to, with incredible arrogance, lie about what a case is, as Sotomayor did with the college loan.
Well, and, you know, look,
case
in a society where we have less, where a generation has less and less respect for authority, then you basically assign authority where you think it should belong at the moment.
Yeah.
I actually saw somebody comment that said, well, why can one judge say this and another judge in a different court say something different? That's how the system works. Whether it's the appellate court or the highest court, the Supreme Court, those are the levels of authority in the judicial branch. But if you don't believe in authority, if you're looking at a number of people in our society that just want to take authority away, or at the very least don't respect the authority that our system provides, then they'll assign authority where they believe it should be. And if they don't know the three branches of government, then they have no idea how the separation of powers works. And all of that is about authority, the checks and balances of our system. And if you don't care about authority, you probably don't care about learning about the three branches of government.
Well, no, all you care about is someone will scream at you and say, as you talked about Ilhan Omar, you know, should the president be able to do that? Yay!
Yes.
Yeah,
I believe he can.
You know? I want.
Right.
So give the authority to anybody who gives me what I want.
Exactly.
And the Constitution be damned.
Right.
Because they don't really care about it.
No, they don't. And that's it. Because in the perfect example, you know, because that's why I brought up the argument with Betsy DeVos. If Betsy DeVos were still the Secretary of Education, would Sotomayor have made that point? Well, no. But we could go back to the Iran deal. The Iran deal, and Obama made that deal with Iran without Congress. After Obama was no longer in office and Trump was in office, there was a poll that came out and said, do you believe that the president should make the deal or that Congress should make the deal? And the majority, I don't think it was a plurality, I think it wasn't
the
majority.
I think it was a majority, yeah.
That said, we believe that should happen through Congress. Then it was specific and used Trump's name. Do you believe Trump should repeal the Iran deal and send it to Congress?
No!
Because there's what it comes down to.
Right.
How many cases of executive orders and things like that where it was, well, if you believe the president has the authority, the executive branch has the authority, and they do have the authority on certain items. Now, that authority only lasts as long as their presidency, because the next president can overturn it, because if one president has the authority, the other president has the next president has the authority to repeal it and do the opposite. But that's, you know, those are the things that the left wants to dismiss and not pay attention to. It shouldn't be that way. But more and more, they're trying to convince you, well, we shouldn't have a Senate. We shouldn't have a Supreme Court. Or maybe we should have a Supreme Court of 40 or 50 justices sitting up there. I mean, I don't know how far they would pack it if they could. These are the things that everybody in their mind starts getting in their mind. Well, yeah, no, you're right. It should, because things aren't going their way. You know, if you've got a $100,000, $150,000 college loan and you're looking for the government or anybody to come in and just wipe a chunk of that off of your balance sheet, then, yeah, you start looking at things going, no, it should be that way. But until you get into the actual legal argument and the separation of powers and why our system is the way it is, then honestly, it's all an emotional argument. It's not a legal argument at all.
Yeah.
And politically, there are some things, and we talked about that earlier this week. Look, there are a number of things there. But politically, the discussion takes a different turn. I mean, this is, you know, the Chief Justice Roberts was talking about it. I think a couple of the other justices were talking about fairness the other day in the hearing. All right. I don't like hearing the fairness thing, because that's not the legal argument. I understand how hearings work, and They're going through the entire thing. But that's more of the political argument of, okay, let's take a look. If our representatives wanted to do this, and let's just say they're going to start discussing this, debating this on the floor in the House, then you start having that of, okay, this is why I support it. This is why my constituents want it. And then this is why, you know, the next representative, this is why my constituents don't want it. This is fair. That isn't fair. We can't spend this kind of money. You start having those. But they have the authority to make it happen if they want to do that. The executive branch, actually, if we want them to do that, if the executive branch does this, this is far beyond their authority.
Right. And it's the thing is, it's not that complicated either. I mean, I believe, I could be mistaken, but looking back at my life, I believe I did not learn about the three branches of government in school. I believe it was my father.
Yeah.
Because early on, you know, I remember, you know, growing up in the Cold War, I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. And it's amazing the things that, you know, and they say, well, kids can't handle anything. And I remember going to sleep every night. We're 6, 7 years old, and you remember it. You know, it's like, oh, no, will the world be around tomorrow? But I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis at that time and the fact that, you know, nuclear war could happen as a kid.
Yeah.
And I think at that point, you know, there were questions that I had and that my brothers and sisters had. You know, why is this going on? Why are we different? And then my father went through to explain communism and then explained very simple, you know, that we're different, that it's not a one-party system, that we have a two-party system politically. But then you have, you explained to us the separation of powers. And it's a very, I mean, it's simple. You have the legislative branch, which is the House and the Senate. You have the judicial branch, which is the, you know, the courts and the federal courts and the Supreme Court. And then you have Red Eye Radio, then you have the executive branch, the president of the United
States.
We're
the fourth branch, yeah.
Well, we're the fourth branch. That's right, exactly right. Thank you, Deep Voice Guy.
Yeah.
And so the executive branch, when it comes to things like war and being commander in chief, Congress can't tell him what to do. That's why, for example, every presidency has rejected the War Powers Act, where Congress has said, we want to limit the president's ability to do this. In war, he must report to us. He must do that. Now, most presidents abide by that because politically it's a good thing. But every single administration since the War Powers Act has come out has specifically said, constitutionally, we don't have to abide by this. We will, because we know this is serious, but Congress can't tell the executive branch. They can cut off our funding. But when it comes to many aspects of war, Congress cannot tell the executive branch, which is the president, what to do. The founding fathers said, okay, only one person can, one person, the buck has to stop if we're at war or the security of the United States is there. You can't run that through Congress. At times, you need an instantaneous decision.
Right.
Most people understand that.
Right.
The other powers that the president has are the powers that Congress gives him. If they say, we'll allow the president to do this, or we'll allow the president to do that, or we'll allow the president to do that, or there'll be leeway in many of these bills where the executive branch can decide what to do. That's where really executive orders, for the most part, come in, is where Congress has approved of it. And the judicial branch, you know, and Congress is supposed to spend the money. Congress spends the money and makes the law.
Right.
Now, but the judicial branch is simply supposed to decide what's constitutional. And that's what's going on. It's not hard to understand this stuff. It's simple. And you understand that the reason they did this was the fear of the founding fathers of power being concentrated in one area of the government. That's what they were trying to stop. And you've seen this push and pull back and forth. But the fact is, when over half of Americans have half of Americans don't like this, what the Supreme Court's doing. Half of Americans have no idea why the Supreme Court exists.
Right.
And it's really amazing how the numbers sort of coincide.
Yeah, right.
It's really amazing. Well, yeah, they're completely ignorant. They don't. But think about that. It's something that to me was such a basic thing, and you understood it right away. You understood it. You went, okay, even as a kid, you could understand that, right?
Yeah, sure.
Communism, one-party system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, government controls all the businesses, whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. I don't like that. As a kid, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. Well, I like this. Yeah, because people disagree all the time. My father would tell us. And so you've always got this push and pull, but power can't be concentrated. So there's no chance of a one-party system or a dictatorship in the country.
Right.
Unless the culture of it dictates it, as we're finding out now.
Interesting as a kid, I had a very young child. I had a very selfish reason. My dad went over to fight in the Vietnam conflict when I was very young. And when he came home, I was starting to learn about, okay, why did dad go somewhere else? Right. And then I didn't like the fact that, you know, others could tell my dad, you've got to go, right? That he had a boss in that way. And then I learned about how the military works and how the system works. And that basically was, that explanation was to calm me down. And he said, look, if we lived in a different country, it would be much, much different. And I serve voluntarily. I do this on my own. I want to do this so I can help protect you and your brothers, your sister, your mom, and everybody who lives here. And, you know, he started explaining things to me as if I were a child, because I was. But I was, you know, and it was one of those things where, you know, it was a learning process where I felt, you know, where my parents felt I needed to learn this in order to satisfy a very big concern, because my dad was gone during that time, and I really had to settle that emotionally as a kid, and they knew that. And so that was kind of the basis for teaching me and my brothers, and my sister wasn't old enough yet, but teaching us how the system works and why we have the system we have.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. And then you look at what liberals want to do to the schools today, brainwash our kids into CRT and the liberal transgender activist movement. They don't wish to teach civics. They don't want, you know, they don't want, I believe that they want people to be ignorant. If people aren't ignorant, the Democrats cannot win. Mm-hmm. It's that simple.
You've
seen it. It's blatant out there, because why wouldn't? First thing you would look at, because you look at, you know, you and I remember the Louisiana situation with the charter schools there, mm-hmm. when the Obama administration tried to come in and cut it down, and it was minority parents that threw a fit.
Yeah.
Parents across the board love school choice.
Right.
It's government that doesn't. Why?
Why?
Top of the Hour News is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit howesproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you would like to get in. And I know we're talking about the Supreme Court and the arguments 2 days ago on the school the college loan transfer program that Biden wants to do, and the Supreme Court justices on the left, in this case Sotomayor, lying about what the case is about. And we just think it's important to be specific, because I think that's a hell of a charge when you say a Supreme Court mm-hmm. justice is lying. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's why we went through exactly what she said and then broke it down why it's a lie.
Right.
But as we said, she can get away with the lie because the majority of people in the United States, the majority of people, according to the Annenberg polling last year, cannot tell you what the three branches of government are, which means over half of people, roughly 56%, according to the poll, have no idea how their government works.
Yeah, right.
And it's not hard to figure out, as we explained last hour. But before we get to more of that, and a couple of calls on that, too. I was wrong.
Yeah.
I said that the school board in Canada would not respond to the Canadian high school teacher with the massive Z-cup prosthetic breasts.
Mm-hmm.
They did. They put him on paid leave. Why? The New York Post caught him out in public without the breasts.
Oh.
New York Post got pictures of him without the breasts. And he was claiming that the breasts were real.
But he's also claiming he's a woman. So here's my question.
Yeah, I think this is a good question I think you had there.
Now, if he can claim legitimately that he is a female,
yes,
why can't he legitimately claim that those are real?
Yes. If you can change biology, if you can change science.
Mm-hmm. Because.
No, that's a great point. As we attempt to figure out the liberal rule book.
Why should the rule book require him to go through, like, hormone therapy? It actually doesn't.
Right.
If you look at it, right? But the practice has been, for those going through a transition, you would take female hormones. Now, I don't know if he's taking them or not. I have no idea. But just as an example, he's using prosthetics. And why is that any different than anything else in this equation? Right. He's claiming one thing that is clearly not the case. So why is he on paid leave? If he can claim he's a woman.
Teachers union? I don't know. I understand what you're saying. If he can claim, if in Canada, if you say you're a biological woman and you're a biological man, and by saying so makes you the biological woman, then why can't you claim that the prosthetics are real breasts?
If you are if you're the father of a transgender and you refuse to call them by their preferred pronoun, you go to jail. There's punishment for that, right?
Yes. Yes.
Why?
Well, the school board has to go to jail now.
Why does the school board get to issue, in this case, paid leave, so the guy gets a paid vacation? Paid leave, which is punishment, because he claims something that biologically wasn't true. What's different?
Yes.
He should get his job back and the paid leave should end.
My God, the liberal circular firing squad
in
Canada may be better than the liberal circular firing squad in the United States.
Yeah, no, because we can always say, well, no, this is where it's headed. Well, up there, it's already there.
Yeah. I did see the New York.
When you create rules like this.
The New York Post pictures in the story, it's like that.
Right.
It's just greatness.
When you create rules like this, expect these types of scenarios to come up. Because what you're saying is, no. We have this set of rules. Well, that's what the people who oppose what you're doing and what your rules are were saying before. And they're wrong. They're bigoted. In fact, they're breaking the law. Well, why is this any different? He's claiming something that isn't biologically true.
Right.
And he's being punished for it. How dare you?
Jail the school board.
All of them. If I'm the lawyer up there for the teacher.
No, that's.
That's the case I'm making.
Yeah.
Why is it any different? Well, because those are ridiculously, how dare you? If I were to say it's ridiculous that a man is living as a woman, what would happen to me in Canada?
Ask Jordan Peterson.
Exactly. So why is this any different? Claiming something that isn't biologically true, you can't bring biology into it, and you can't measure how, well, I guess technically they can measure, because what did you say, it's a Z cup?
Z.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I mean, they can measure in that way. But you cannot, on the ridiculous scale, measure and say, and apply your sensibilities to it and say, well, you can't do that because they're enormous.
Well, that would be bigoted.
It would be.
Because they're not professional because that's what they wrote. And you and I went through what the school board wrote yesterday where they didn't get specific at all. Could you imagine being in that meeting where we need to talk about professionalism, but we can't talk about what we're really talking about?
Exactly.
And if, again, if you... This is just great. I mean, when it runs through your head, you're just like, yeah. But as you said, if you can make the claim that is a complete lie, that a biological woman is a biological man because they say so, then it doesn't matter whether the breasts are fake or not. The breasts can be real because you say so.
They're real to him.
Right. And so if you criticize it because they're a distraction, because they're too large,
mm-hmm.
then in essence, you are body shaming.
And you're body shaming. There you go. We're gonna borrow from another page in the rule book, but it's not our rule book. We don't write the rules, to be clear.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is, and I always wonder about somebody who doesn't know us and cuts into the middle of our conversation.
Right. Yeah.
Who thinks these guys are just nuts? No. We're making fun of the rule book, the liberal rule book.
If a biological female teacher were of the same proportion, seriously, when NORAD is calling saying, is that you? Or then would it be the same?
You could actually claim it would. It's a... Will he claim it's a disability?
Because it would be...
disability, body shaming.
Because
oh, man, I mean, I'm telling you, we're rewriting the liberal rule book here in Canada.
If it were biologically true across the board,
right,
biological female with the same cup size naturally, number one, would she be working as a teacher? But number two, if she were... Wouldn't that be body shaming if they were to take this same, if it's a distraction, which I'm sure it is, but would you take the same measure?
No.
No.
You couldn't.
No.
It'd be discrimination.
Yes. And body shaming.
Body shaming, discrimination.
And under their rules, how is it not discrimination here if he can claim something that is not biologically true, then where are the boundaries?
Right. And like I said, would that be against some type of disability act in Canada? Because you know, in the real world, if a woman actually had those size breasts, there would 99.9% of women would have terrible back problems.
Yes, they would. Yeah. Many of them would get reduction surgery.
Yes.
And those, but these are the questions you have to ask. They're the ones that set the basis for all of this in creating rules and laws that say that you can claim something that isn't biologically true.
Right. If that's the case, then it's got to be across the board.
That's my argument before the courts in Canada.
Yeah.
If I'm the attorney, restore his status immediately.
Or face a lawsuit
yep.
for discrimination.
I think that could be coming next.
Yeah. And jail the school board.
Yes.
By the way, I want to make clear again, because sometimes people miss our sarcasm. That is known as sarcasm.
Yes, we're going by their standards.
Yes, their
because
standards,
if you'll treat a father that way for not using the right pronoun with his child, then how could you not treat the school board for threatening now the livelihood, even though it's paid leave, threatening the livelihood of this individual here in the same way, because you're saying you're not going to recognize his preference?
We will keep the death penalty off the table, though.
Yes, yeah. No, yeah, no, no. Okay. We're not. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's
we're not inhumane.
30 to 35 years with good behavior. That's all we're talking about.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Leased owner-operators should be aware of four common revenue myths, lest you fall into the trap of mistaking revenue for profit. Myth one, concentrate on increasing revenue because costs will take care of themselves. This is not true, as costs are fundamental to the profit equation and the area where owners exert the most control to improve. Myth two, more revenue per mile is the answer to all problems. Though carrier pay packages differ in structure, revenue per mile really doesn't change much from company to company, but there can be a big difference in miles, overall gross revenue, reimbursements, and fees. Myth 3. All you have to do to be successful is run a lot of miles. In reality, revenue is only half of the profit equation. Costs are the other half. It's possible to generate a lot of revenue, yet spend $1.10 to make every dollar. Myth 4. You can tell how well you're doing by the size of your settlement check. The settlement check is only a part of the success picture. Miles driven, loads hauled, conditions, mechanical problems, time off, and especially costs all have to be considered. Owner-Operator Business 101 is provided by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Transfer mm-hmm. case in front of the Supreme Court in Sotomayor,
yeah.
And our allegation is, and we backed it up by actually saying what she said and what the specifics of the case actually are, how she lied trying to make the case that we justices can't decide, you know, how much of a loan is forgiven. They're not. They're not doing that.
No.
And they're not the ones that are deciding this. What they're only deciding is it constitutional for the executive branch to do this.
Right.
And she knowingly lied, but we brought up again how the last survey by the Annenberg Institute found that 56% of Americans cannot name the three branches of government.
Mm-hmm.
She lies because she can depend on the ignorance of half of the American public having no idea how the country works
mm-hmm.
and who has what authority. Yep. Let's go to Mark in Kansas City. Mark, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Yeah, my son is a great example of the insufficiency of civics education. He's 35 years old, okay? He has a degree from Purdue University. He went to law school. He graduated law school, okay? He passed his law exam. He was sworn in as a lawyer in the state of Illinois. I asked him, I said, son, who do you think will pay for these student loans if they're forgiven? You know what his answer was?
What?
He said, nobody. That's what forgiveness is all about.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
Now, it needs to be
like I said, yeah. He's a lawyer in the state of Illinois.
Mm. It needs to be a...
That's my son. I am so... I just can't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there needs to be a... if he passed the bar, there are some questions there that he maybe needs to go back on that bar exam and review.
I think what's needed is a family financial intervention.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
We appreciate
you sharing that with us.
Yeah,
I mean,
we do. Yeah, it's got to be tough to do that.
Sure.
I mean, it's not easy to do that.
But it's
extreme frustration.
You know,
and
again, his son having gone through the system, as he says, and, you know, passed the bar exam, when you go through that process, you don't have to be studying constitutional law to come across the separation of powers. when you're studying to be a lawyer.
Yeah, I mean,
that should have happened long before you went to law school, but
yeah.
At the very least, certainly by the time you pass the bar.
But that's why they call it loan forgiveness, because the whole point is nobody has to pay. And you and I talked about how it reminded us of the Seinfeld episode, you know, where Kramer's telling, I guess, Jerry's stereo or something isn't working.
Right.
So they're going to, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. They send it out or something. And if it's damaged, just, you know, it's no big deal because the company's just write it off. Or I forgot what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was the write it off episode. It's like when they write it off and Seinfeld looks at him and says, you have no idea what that means. And neither do you, but they do, and that's why they write it off. That it's just this word,
right.
That it's just the money just disappears. There is no consequence to that. And again, that comes to, we talk about political ignorance of over half the country does not know how, you know, this country works, what the Constitution is about, the three branches of government, the separation of powers. So a Sotomayor can tell them, anything that they want. But the same thing with economics. Mm-hmm. We are an economically illiterate country where people have no idea how economics actually works.
Well, it's interesting because they take that. The left this is what they've done since the beginning. And that is they use these noble words, right? That loan forgiveness. Oh, see, this is what forgiveness is all about. Yeah, well, who told you this is actually forgiveness? This isn't forgiveness.
It's transfer.
In the sense that you believe it is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, we talked about it, the Affordable Care Act. Affordable, nope. Care, nope. Act, yes, it's all an act. No doubt. But this is the problem that we have when you have willfully ignorant people who insist, and all they'll do is focus on what's in it for me. I don't care, but are they going to do it or not? Are they going to forgive my loan?
It's just, and it's American if I get relief.
Right.
Doesn't matter how.
Yep.
Just give me what I want.
Yep.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Call and join the conversation. 1-866-90-RED-EYE. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harding. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, I was just thinking about the first hour and a half of the show, and it truly is insane what's coming from the left. I mean, everything is just completely.
Yeah, it is.
Is completely insane. But it's easy, and that's why. We look at the Republican Party and say, hey, if you articulate things right, you can't lose, and you can break down, like as we did earlier in the show with Sotomayor, you can break it down and explain to people what the three branches of government are and what the justices, the constructionist judges are doing, and you can easily convince independents. You're never going to convince, you know, the last caller talking about his son. You're probably never going to convince his son, but that's not who you're trying to convince. You're trying to convince independents. You're trying to convince about 10% of the population who may be ignorant, but are willing to learn.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And ignorance is not an insult. It means you just lack the facts about how things are done. You know, stupid, you know, as something that you would never call, you know, Biden, you know, going from the quote the other day in case people are watching.
He says, I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Well, saying you're stupid might be taken as an insult. Ignorant means, I said it the other day, I said, I'm ignorant on this particular thing of some topic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an insult. It means I don't have the facts or the knowledge on this particular thing. And that's where a lot of the American public is. But if you know that you are and you don't wish to learn because it hurts your narrative, then you are truly at that point, you know, willfully ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the, you know, it's the reality of where we are today. And again, both on law, the three branches of government, economics.
Yeah.
I mean, it's across the board, the ignorance in this country. And that all goes back to education.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Kevin in Chicago. Kevin, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I totally agree with you guys, because when I was growing up, they had a TV show that came on every Saturday morning. It was called Schoolhouse Rock. It taught us, I don't know if it was nationally shown, but it taught the branches of government. It taught how government works, taught how bills are made and passed. And my own little survey, just growing up here in the Chicago area, most people, even middle class successful people, are, I guess, what you would call willfully ignorant as far as economics 101 and how our government works. Liberals argue from their feelings, but you can't get them to see the facts. And you, and it's like they don't understand that, like you were saying, as far as when you forgive something, somebody has to pay for it. Somebody has to pay for the doctor. Somebody has to pay for the light. Somebody has to pay. That just doesn't disappear.
Yeah, right.
And so it doesn't, you know, it just, I've been saying this for a very, very long time. I didn't even know I was a conservative. You know, I'm not a Republican. I'm definitely not a Democrat. But it's like I've been saying this for so many years, as far as, especially I'm a black American, and most people that I know don't have a clue about how our government works. And so when you get politicians that promise them everything, and they depend on their willful ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they promise them everything.
Yeah.
And then you try to tell them just simple stuff. It's like their eyes glaze over and they just, you know, I mean, I've been called all kind of names. I mean, you can imagine. And it just, it's past sad.
Mm.
It's past sad. Mm. You know, and I noticed that talk show hosts, you guys come around to stuff to where a lot of Americans have seen this years and years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember when Barack Obama was running, I used to call him a liar when he was a state senator in Illinois, when he ran for president. And I never heard anybody on radio call him a flat-out liar, you know, until his last term, and I think 2 years after that, then they started really calling him what he was. And it's like the Republican Party do not break things down to the American people. And I think if they did, like what you just said, I think that it would go a long way, because I think the Republicans give American citizens too much credit for knowing how the government works. And if they broke it down a little bit, I think they will gain a lot of ground with the independents.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a lot of work to do in terms of their narrative. But and to be clear, we were very early, and we don't take it lightly. We don't just throw out things and say, well, they're a liar. We'll tell you why they're lying, why we believe that they're saying something they know isn't true. And during the promotion of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, he was lying, and we knew he was lying, and we said it repeatedly. And again, we're not on here to get that kind of attention. We're here to what what we do, what we practice here on this program, is we're going to give you our opinion, but it's going to be based in something, and you're going to know why we think that way, whether you agree or not. But those are the things that, you know, I think overall, you know, you touched on a number of things there, Kevin, and I think, you know, it is beyond sad. But they know, the liberals know, we talk about what the how much work the Republicans need to do, but what the Democrats have been very good at is building out what Daniel Patrick Moynihan, a Democrat, years ago called the pathology of dependency. And that was, once you start giving more and more to the public, they're going to demand even more and more, and there's no way to break that pathology. And Gary kind of alluded to that as we were going into the bottom of the hour break. But those are the things that, you know, that it's, look, I just want something for me, and the government has been giving things out. And they were talking about it just the other day, screaming about it. Well, big business got a break. Well, big business got a break because Congress acted. And Congress can act to change student loans as well. The question here, the legal question at hand, is whether or not the president can. And we believe clearly he cannot. He does not have the authority.
One thing I want to touch on, Kevin, because you said you're called names. Is it based on the fact that it seems like you have independent thoughts? You told us you're black. You have independent thoughts. Is that from your liberal black friends who, in essence, because we've talked about this a lot, and this is one of the things that I know bothers us the most, and it's been around for a while, how blacks who think independently and in an autonomous way, that you don't judge yourself by your skin color, you judge yourself by your brain, you judge yourself by your character, you judge yourself by, you know, the substance of your argument, your critical thinking, all these things that are all about the mind. And when you do that, you're criticized in a racial way of, for example, not being authentically black. We've talked about Tim Scott and other conservatives that are called Uncle Toms, an Uncle Tom. And to me, that comes from the liberal black leadership in this country, and it comes from liberals that, you know, dominate the Democratic Party. You go through that. That's got to be painful. It has to be painful at times, but eventually you've got to put up the wall, don't you? You just got to put up a wall and go, I don't care what you say.
You're absolutely right. I had a conversation with older black men before Obama was elected, and they told me, well, young blood, you don't know how it is. You know, we're going to have the first black president, this and that. Now, I'm originally from Alabama. I seen the Klan march when I was a kid, full dress. Now, these guys, it was four or five older black gentlemen. It's probably about 60-some, 70 years old. This was before Obama got elected. Oh, you don't know how it is. You know, we're going to have this and that. And I said, and they, in other words, called me ignorance. And I sat up here and listened to these guys, and I said, okay, since I don't understand it, and you're saying that you was around during the civil rights movement, this and that. I said, but you're taking exactly what Martin Luther King stood for, the number one quote that he's known around the world for, judge a man by the content of his character, not by his skin. You're taking that and turning it totally upside down, throwing it out the window, but you're calling me ignorant. I mean, it's just like, and they got mad at me because I just sat up here and told them that, you know, you guys, and most of them was from Chicago, they say, I've experienced racism, and racism exists, but that's human nature. You cannot legislate that out. But the thing is, you know, I just see it, and yeah, I've been called names because I think for myself. I was raised to think for myself, and if anybody tells you that you're supposed to think a certain way or act a certain way because you're black, that is sheer racism, and that's ignorance on their behalf. And so I've taught my kids that you never, if you make a decision or if you go a certain path, do it because you chose that, not because you're expected to do that, or, you know, just because your skin color or your friends do it. And that's the way I was raised. But yeah, I've been called names because I think for myself, and I'm very outspoken, and I have zero tolerance.
Yeah,
ignorance.
If the goal is
too much ignorance,
I think you agree with this. If the goal is not to judge people in an autonomous way, that you are a human being completely separate, and I'm very curious about, you know, what you're about, and I have no preconceived ideas about you based on your skin color, that's the way that it's supposed to be. You should be a mystery to me. I shouldn't sit there and anybody shouldn't think, well, if this person is a particular skin color, then they must think this way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the problem. You have to look at people in a completely, until we get to that point of doing it, then we're always going to have a problem. But it's institutionalized. The identity politics of judging people as a group is institutionalized and systemic in the Democratic Party.
You know, it's funny when I talk to people, especially, you know, white, black or whatever, and we get to talk in politics. So they assume, because I look younger than I am, you know, I'm 53 years old. I have three kids that graduated from college. My youngest is a sophomore in college. But they start talking politics. And then when they hear me talking, you should see their face. It's funny to me on the inside because especially, you know, other races, they automatically assume because I got tattoos, so they automatically assume, oh, he must be Democrat or liberal. But then when I get to talking to them, and sometimes I talk to them in a condescending way because of their sheer ignorance on, and I'm not saying that they, some successful people, but when they hear me, I mean, you should see their face. It'd be so funny. And sometimes I've had people walk away from me once they found out that I'm a conservative. I love my country. I've been around the world. You know, you should see their face. And it's actually funny to me.
Mm. Well, listen, thank you so much. We appreciate your call. And,
thanks, Kevin.
It's like I said, it's what we have said. The goal has to be where people are viewed as autonomous beings and judged by the content of their character. And because we do talk radio, the substance of your argument.
Well, I've always been fascinated about, you know, other people's lives, right? Their experiences and everything else. And you know, what's it like in the daily life of another individual, any other individual. And so I've always had that kind of, you know, curiosity of what people are like. But inside the political movement, inside the liberal political movement, you can't have that. You can't have people talking to each other. You have to build the fear. You build the fear to keep people from talking to each other. Because once people talk to each other, and we've been saying it for years, in our daily lives, generally speaking, we get along. As Kevin mentioned, and as we mentioned, yeah, there are people out there that are ignorant and racist.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, as a society, we get along in our day-to-day lives. But the left can't have you believing that. They need you to believe, and the idea would be, we can't have people talking to each other. We can't have conversations. Because once you do, then that entire narrative fails completely.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Check out all the latest in news, events, trekking information, and podcasts at Red Eye Radio's website at Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I completely forgot.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, Kevin in Chicago and the mayoral race.
Oh, yeah.
You saw, I mean, the headlines were all over the place yesterday, mm-hmm. everywhere I looked.
Mm-hmm.
Lori Lightfoot believes race and gender contributed to her election, her re-election loss. And
okay.
I went, wow, her and Kamala Harris.
Yeah,
it's like,
right.
And the best thing is when you realize it, it's like, just the media, and she blamed the media also, the racism in the media. Well, wait a minute. It's all liberal. I mean,
right.
It's the primary is Democrats.
Right.
And just like Kamala Harris, she's basically saying Democrats are racist.
Yes. The liberals of Chicago.
Liberals of Chicago
are racist.
Nobody
and misogynist.
Nobody ever puts that together.
No, they don't.
They don't. The media never. You know,
no, but that's the claim. That's what she's claiming.
Right. They're going after, they're saying Democrat. These are Democrats saying Democrats are racist.
Right.
And as we say, it's about time.
Right. Exactly. At least she recognized that, but nobody in the media recognized what she was actually saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as we also know, you know, wives do what their husbands want them to do.
Yes, girlfriends Hillary would tell do you, it, yes. Yeah. they vote the way that their husbands or wives or their husbands or boyfriends or bosses.
Right.
Remember? They're bosses.
They don't have independent minds of their own.
That's right. Well, how did Bill tell you to vote, Hillary?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our app today and listen when and where you choose if you can't listen live overnight. Last thing here on the whole student loan thing, because yeah. Now it's a legal issue, but I thought, you know, when we're talking about the fact of the left in this country that they can get away with, you know, they can get away with lies. Because we have a significant portion of the population that is ignorant. And we had mentioned Sotomayor talking about during the oral arguments the other day on the student loan transfer program, not forgiveness, it's a transfer, that, well, you know, the justices shouldn't be deciding this. Mm. You know, they shouldn't be deciding how much student relief, how much relief these students get. And, of course, she's lying. They're not deciding. They're deciding whether it's constitutional, you know, for the executive branch and whether they have a constitutional argument.
Right.
That's what they're doing. But because the public is ignorant, and we mentioned the fact of the latest Annenberg survey from last year, which showed that the majority of the people in this country, 56%, cannot name the three branches of government, that means the majority of people in this country have no idea why the Supreme Court exists, what the role of the Supreme Court is, what the role of the judicial branch is, and what the role of the executive branch is, because they don't even know what they are.
Right.
And so ignorance is bliss. Mm-hmm. We had a discussion on that yesterday.
Yeah,
a friend of mine heard our conversation. Mm. He said, man, he goes, you're the first person to ever say that I ever heard that said, ignorant is not bliss for you. It's like, oh, thanks. But when you look at here, the polling, this was a polling that was done last August before Biden came out with his plan. You know, and they asked the question, do you favor or oppose the government forgiving up to $10,000 in federal student loan debt for those who earn less than $150,000 a year as single people or less than $300,000 for married couples? So they asked that way with the forgiveness thing.
Yeah, right.
It was interesting, the caller that we got earlier who said his son believes that the money just disappears. It's the old Seinfeld, they just write it off.
Yeah, who pays for it? Nobody. It's forgiven.
Right, it's forgiven. It's just written off.
Yeah.
Democrats support it 88% to 12%. Mm. Independents support it 58% to 41%. Republicans oppose it 63% to 37%. But still 37% of Republicans, when you ask the question this way, support the government forgiving $10,000 in federal student debt. Uh-huh. Why? Because even Republicans, if you say, would you like free cash? There's a ton of Republicans that say, yep. Now, when you ask the question, do you support this if it primarily benefited higher income people? Democrats that had 88% of support went down to 44% support.
Hmm.
Independents that had 58% support for the student loan plan, when you say it will primarily benefit higher income people, from 58% to 26% support.
Hmm.
Republicans 37% to 22%. When you ask, and this is the real truth of it here, do you support it if it raises your taxes? well, eventually it will raise your tax. I mean, they'll probably just throw it in debt, debt to begin with, but somebody has to pay the interest on that eventually, so it is going to raise your taxes.
It is eventually going to raise your taxes. Right. You will be affected by it indirectly down the road, yes.
The support for Democrats goes, when reality hits, when you get out of the delusional world and you ask the question, you know, what are the consequences if you have to pay taxes? Do you support it? Mm. Democrat support goes from 88% to 56%.
Mm-hmm.
Independent support goes from 58% to 30%.
Mm.
And then finally, the other reality of what will happen when you phrase it in the context of economic reality, and you ask, would you be for this plan if it encouraged colleges to increase their tuition and fees? Which, of course, that comes from the economics of every single bubble that's ever existed.
Yeah.
The college bubble, having easy money, college tuition and fees have skyrocketed way over inflation over the last 30 years in this country.
Yep.
Just like the housing market. When you had easy money, the prices of houses skyrocketed through the roof.
Yep.
That's what easy money does.
Yep.
That's the economics of it. So when you ask that reality, Democrat support goes from 88% to 33%.
Hmm.
88% support to 33. Independent, 58 to 21. Republican, 37 to 18. So when you bring the when you bring in the economic reality of it, you probably have about 25% support for the college, quote, forgiveness, in reality, transfer loan program.
That's
when you ask people, and that was back last year.
That's probably where I would have put it, somewhere around there. Which is why you can't get it done in Congress. This is why the Democrats couldn't get it done in Congress. Not only did they not have the seats in the Senate, enough seats to get it through in the Senate, but in the House, why, you know, again, you start looking at the breakdown and it starts coming back at you. Because in those districts, people start asking, well, wait a minute, I don't have a college loan. What do I get? And you can't get there politically. This is why they had to make this move. The power does lie in Congress. They have the authority to do it.
Yeah, they could do it.
There's no political will for them to do it. And it's because the majority of people really don't. When you break it down and ask the real questions behind it, the majority of people don't support it.
Yeah, when you bring reality and the consequences of it and you don't lie, because as we have stated, by saying it's loan forgiveness, that is a lie.
It's a lie.
It isn't loan forgiveness. It's transferring the responsibility of college loan debt from somebody who signed a contract and received the benefit and the government stating it is more moral for people who did. This is the morale, as we've always stated. This is a morality behind it.
Yeah.
To the Democrats, it is more moral for the people who actually sign the loan, receive the benefit of that loan. It is more moral to transfer their debt to somebody who did not sign the loan, did not receive the benefit of the loan, and in many cases, therefore, don't have the higher education that was received from those people. Word it that way and see what the support is.
Right.
Word it that way, that it's a student debt transfer program from people who signed the contract, received the benefit, and it will be transferred to people who did not take out that loan and did not receive the benefit. See what the polling is at that point.
Well, I mean, that's it. You do a simple man on the street and walk up to people. Are you willing to pay higher taxes if it means we can help pay off student loans for other people?
Yeah. It's the forgiveness. And I'm so glad that the one gentleman called the show today who talked about his son,
mm-hmm.
who's got a law degree.
Yeah.
I said, well, what do you think happens? Well, who do you think pays for it? Nobody does. It's forgiven. It's just forgiven. And I'm like, my God, we do live in the Seinfeld world.
Yep.
Just write it off.
Mm-hmm.
Write it off.
Right.
Meanwhile, President Uncle Leo. I'm sorry. I just.
Hello.
By the way, I was thinking about that yesterday. I was thinking about, you know, that, you know, Biden always seeming lost and not what's going on.
Yeah.
Doesn't know what's going on. And then looking at the Garland yesterday. Merrick Garland, the attorney general's, you know, stumbling over himself. And I'm like, my God, we have an Uncle Leo government.
Well,
and it's almost as if let's just, you know, we're, you know, it's because it's really funny here because I was reading the thing that 75% of Americans are concerned about the president's cognitive state. And the Democrats and the family say he's absolutely fine. He's as good as any human being out there and nobody buys it. And to the public, it's almost as if I'm thinking of Uncle Leo. Remember when he was shoplifting?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, what are you doing? Your shit goes, I'm an old man.
Right.
I just tell them, oh, I didn't know what was going on. This book inside of my jacket.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just, I'm confused. I'm confused. And I'm like, my God, when I was watching Garland, I go, that's what the imagery is like that I really don't know what's going on.
It's so funny you say that because I thought to myself, wait a minute. When he stepped up to the podium to talk about the raid on Mar-a-Lago, that was a very different Merrick Garland than what we saw yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I thought, is he playing that up? Oh well, we're just trying to do the best that we can. Our approach is we're just trying to. And I thought to myself, hold on a second, this isn't the guy who was at the podium a few months ago.
And nobody knows anything.
I signed off on that warrant on the Trump raid. He stood up and boasted about it.
Oh.
Hmm?
I got to get to that. I just remember that just reminded me. There's so much news out there.
Yeah.
The New York Times story that there were people in the FBI that did not want to do that raid on Mar-a-Lago.
We've been asking that question from the beginning.
They did not want to go that direction. They said, we need to ask him first.
Yeah. Right.
The next president. And
let's coordinate this with him, not do it while he's out of town.
And this was a New York Times story on this yesterday.
Yeah.
I'll have to get to that one. I just remembered that right now.
Yeah.
But and also we'll get to some audio of the highlights, lowlights of some of the questioning to Merrick Garland yesterday, really from Tom Cotton and Ted Cruz. Those are the two.
Yeah, Tom Cotton was really on it, I thought, did a really great job. And you know, I mean, going after him on a number of things, including, you know, why aren't you, there are people boasting about, you know, the protests and activity outside of the home of Supreme Court justices. You went after, your Justice Department went after the people on Capitol Hill, and they were able to find them from their social media pages and identify them and the whole thing on the January 6th thing. And you put Tom Cotton claimed millions of man hours on that, but you're not doing anything here when these people are boasting about it. They're not, you know, these people aren't intelligent criminals. They're boasting about their protests and their activity when it comes to being there out in front of the Supreme Court justices' homes, and you're doing nothing about it. And Garland couldn't say a thing. He didn't have an answer, of course. And Marsha Blackburn going after him and basically pointed out the bias, the very bias that, oh, no, if it's committees led by Democrats, you're right there. You're cooperating. But if it's committees led by Republicans, oh, that is an open matter, and we're not going to cooperate because it's an open matter at the Department of Justice. Wow. I mean, he failed at every turn. It was weak.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Del Rotella with advanced synthetic technology.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Okay, I made a mistake. I said the New York Times had the story. I actually saw the headline in the Washington Post about FBI officials debating. They had a different point of view whether to raid Mar-a-Lago or not. Right. The New York Times story was on Hunter Biden's lawyer quitting.
Right, yeah.
So that was interesting to see that. And they say it's because, you know, of the strategy that's going on. And one of the things that even, you know, you see liberal legal experts saying is that Hunter Biden is using the Steve Bannon defense doesn't work.
Right. Well, and, you know, it only keeps it. It only builds more curiosity as the events are being reported. You know, the more reluctant he is to respond, then the longer the process, which means the more steps in the process, which means the more headlines it's going to get.
Here is Hunter Biden's high-powered criminal defense lawyer, Joshua Levy, is reported no longer working for the president's son after unease and dissent plagued the legal defense team. He was hired to work on opposing congressional investigations that seek to reveal the complexities of the family business schemes, the attorney was, and is no longer representing the Biden family business member, the New York Times reported yesterday. He's removed himself from the case, reportedly due to infighting within Hunter's legal team, and specifically Abe Lowell, who was hired in December to defend Hunter and the Biden family from 9 congressional probes, including money laundering and wire fraud. In the past, Lowell has represented high-profile individuals engulfed in political scandals, such as Bill Clinton. Levy was reportedly discontented with Lowell's legal strategies and feared that the tactics could flop. That's where you attack everybody else.
Yeah, right.
So the attacks and lawsuits and all that. In February, Lowell was part of an effort to send Rudy Giuliani, Tony Bobulinski, and 12 others litigation hold letters to preserve laptop from hell records, a move seen by some critics as a public relations tactic to change a troubling narrative for the Biden family, which didn't work. And we actually questioned that. We went, what are you doing? Mike Davis, founder and president of the pro-Trump Article 3 Project, told Breitbart News those letters were a desperate, frivolous, and laughable effort that would hurt the family's legal position because the lawsuit will lead to discovery, as we said, a legal process by which Hunter would be deposed on camera. And we said, you're not going to go after these guys. What do you mean? And we talked about the stupid moves of the legal team.
Right.
And, you know, and now boom. So we'll see where that all goes.
Hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting.
We live in interesting times, do we not?
Listen, I love it. It makes a tremendously enjoyable job even more enjoyable. I didn't even have to go out and get a law degree.
It does. I'm telling you, this has been, we're to Thursday already.
Yeah.
This has been a really, really, really interesting and entertaining week.
Yeah.
It really has.
Yeah, it has been. It gets richer by the moment, you know? I mean, it really is. Sometimes it's like when you step away from it, you're like, and then you get back into it. It really is like one of those rides where you step up and it's like, oh my gosh, what's this going to be? And then you get off the ride, go, man, I want to do that again. Let's get back in line. This is really becoming more and more of an intriguing time to live in, and certainly for us to talk about I mean, the conversations are just because the liberals make it so easy. Their own playbook and rule book just hands us a gift every single day.
The IRS, the world's most...
You're a threat to democracy if you don't download our app, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, so the Washington Post story is, showdown before the raid, FBI agents and prosecutors argued over Trump. Months of disputes between the Justice Department prosecutors and FBI agents over how to best try to recover classified documents from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago club and residence led to a tense showdown near the end of July last year, according to four people familiar with the discussions. Prosecutors argued that new evidence suggested Trump was knowingly concealing secret documents at his Palm Beach home and urged the FBI to correct a surprise to conduct a surprise raid at his property, but two senior FBI officials who would be in charge of leading the search resisted the plan as too combative and proposed instead to seek Trump's permission to search his property, according to the four people who spoke on condition of anonymity to describe a sensitive investigation. Well, that was that. They don't say it here. They say prosecutors ultimately prevailed in that dispute. Is that because of Merrick Garland saying, I signed it? That he overrode the FBI senior officials on that?
It's what it sounds like to me if the story is accurate and true from the Washington Post.
Yeah, so we'll...
I'd love to know who those senior officials are at the FBI that wanted to work this out through Trump and not conduct the raid.
And, well, the thing is, when you look, when hindsight now, when you see the courtesy they extended the president,
yeah,
when it was found in multiple places,
right?
That which means again, way worse than Trump. That was in one location, and these FBI agents now looking at it going, well, you might have had a case, but politically now you've sort of killed your case against Trump,
right?
Because you gave incredible courtesy where you had the lawyers for Biden. And you found them in multiple unsecure places. We knew what Trump had.
Well,
we knew what Trump had. We knew where he had it. It was secure. He had locked them up. We knew it.
And if you're paying attention to the hearings, the points that are being made that were made yesterday with Merrick Garland up there, I think Tom Cotton and Ted Cruz did a great job. Blackburn, I think, did a great job in pointing out the very clear bias that Merrick Garland has as the attorney general. And you can point to this story here and see that. And you ask the right question. And that is, well, you know, is that the point that Merrick Garland is stepping up and boasting at the podium that day? I signed off on this. This is me.
You said yesterday he came off as Uncle Leo. In fact, I do have the Ted Cruz questioning of Merrick Garland yesterday. This is at the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, and they covered, I mean, their lot was covered, but this was Ted Cruz.
Oh, I told just to alert the members, and Senator Cruz is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. General, welcome.
Thank you.
As you know, as I observed at your confirmation hearing, you had built a long record on the Federal Court of Appeals and a reputation of being relatively nonpartisan. And so I had hopes that your tenure as Attorney General would continue that record. I have to say I'm deeply disappointed in what the last 2 years have shown. In my judgment, the Department of Justice has been politicized to the greatest extent I've ever seen in this country. And it has done a discredit to the Department of Justice, to the FBI, and to the administration of law in this country. Let me start with a simple question. General Garland, Is it a federal crime to protest outside of a judge's home with the intent of influencing that judge as to a pending case?
The answer to that is yes, but I also want to at least respond to your characterization of the department, which sure. I vigorously disagree with. I believe the men and women of the department pursue their work every single day in a nonpartisan and an appropriate
General
way.
General Garland, there are thousands of men and women who do that, and I'll tell you, I hear from prosecutors at the Department of Justice, I hear from agents at the FBI who are angry that it is treated as the enforcement arm for the DNC instead of upholding the law in a fair and even-handed manner. So you are right, there are thousands of men and women that are doing the job, but it is the political leadership that you're responsible for. So you just said, yes, it's a crime to protest at the home of a judge. Same goes for jurors, by the way, with the intent of influencing a case. But in the wake of the leak of the Dobbs decision, when rioters descended at the homes of six Supreme Court justices, night after night after night, you did nothing. The department did nothing. When extremist groups like Ruth Senas and Jane's Revenge openly organized campaigns of harassment at the homes of justices, you sat on your hands. When these same groups posted online information about where the justices worship, or their home addresses, or where their kids went to school, you again sat on your hands and did nothing. Your failure to act to protect the safety of the justices and their families was an obvious product of political bias. You agree with Roe versus Wade. You disagree with the Dobbs decision. And the Department of Justice under this president was perfectly happy to refuse to enforce the law and allow threats of violence. And as you know, those threats finally materialized with Nicholas Roski, a 26-year-old man from California who traveled across the country, was arrested outside the home of Justice Kavanaugh, armed with a handgun, a knife, and burglary tools. And he said he came there to kill Justice Kavanaugh because he was enraged by the leaked opinion. Now, of course, you're prosecuting that individual for attempted murder. But did you bring even a single case to enforce this law? Or did the Department of Justice decide this law doesn't apply if it's harassing justices for an opinion we don't like?
When the Dobbs draft was leaked, I did something no attorney general in the history of the department had ever done before. For the first time in history, I ordered United States Marshals 24/7 to defend every residence of every justice.
General Garland, as a judge, you're familiar with asking counsel to answer a question.
I am answering.
Has the Department of Justice enforced this statute? Have you brought a single case against any of these protesters threatening the judgment? Justices under 18 U.S.C. Section 1507. Have you brought even one?
Senator, you asked me whether I sat on my hands, and quite the opposite. I sent 70 United States Marshals.
Let me try again. Has the Department of Justice brought even a single case under this statute? So yes, no question. It's not a give a speech on the other things you did.
The job of the United States Marshals is to defend the lives
of the justices. So the answer is no.
It's to defend the lives of the justices, and that's our number one priority.
Why are you unwilling to say no? The answer is no. You know it's no. I know it's no. Everyone in this hearing room knows it's no. You're not willing to answer a question. Have you brought a case under this statute, yes or no?
As far as I know, we haven't, and what we have done is defended to the lives of the justices with over 70 U.S. Marshals.
How do you decide which criminal statutes the DOJ enforces and which one it doesn't?
The United States Marshals know that they have full
authority. I recognize you want to give a separate speech.
No, I don't want to give a
How do you decide which statutes you enforce and which ones you don't?
The marshals on scene make that determination in light of the priority of defense.
The marshals do not make a determination over whether to prosecute. You, the attorney general, make a determination, and you spent 20 years as a judge, and you're perfectly content with justices being afraid for their children's lives. And you did nothing to prosecute it. Let's shift to another area.
Can I answer the question?
You cannot. General, you have refused to answer the question.
I am answering your question. The Attorney General does not decide whether to arrest.
How did you choose not to enforce this statute?
The marshals on scene.
Marshals don't make that decision.
They do make the decision of whether to make an arrest.
Prosecute someone? No, they don't.
If they make an arrest, then it goes to the marshals.
Let's change topics because our time is limited. We've also seen across the country violent attacks on pregnancy centers by similar left-wing terrorist groups, including one graffiti of a firebomb building said, "Jane was here." There have been attacks all over the country. And yet, the Department of Justice has not brought these violent criminals to justice. You contrast that. If you're a violent criminal and you attack a crisis pregnancy center, that is not a priority in the Biden Department of Justice. Contrast that to Mark Houck, who's a pro-life activist. He's a sidewalk counselor. And he had an altercation with someone who allegedly interfered with his son's personal space and threatened his son, and he pushed him. Now, in an ordinary world, pushing someone would be maybe a simple misdemeanor assault, but not under the Biden Department of Justice. If you're a pro-life activist, what can you expect? Well, in this instance, according to Mr. Houck's wife, 24 agents clad in body armor and ballistic helmets and shields and a battering ram showed up at his house pointing rifles at his family. Why do you send 24 agents in body armor to arrest a sidewalk counselor who happens to be pro-life, but you don't devote resources to prosecute people who are violently firebombing crisis pregnancy?
It is a priority of the department to prosecute and investigate and find the people who are doing those firebombings. They are doing it at night and in secret. So, and we have found one group which we did prosecute.
How many have there been? How many attacks?
There have been a lot. And if you have any information specifically as to who those people are, we would be glad to have that. Did you personally authorize
20 agents going to Mr. Houck's house? And he offered to turn himself in through counsel, but you didn't want that. The Department of Justice wanted to make a show of it. Did you personally authorize it? And do you want to apologize to Mrs. Houck and her 7 children for being terrorized?
The decisions about how to do that are made at the level of the FBI.
Okay, and so you see where this was where this was going. And obviously, and Tom Cotton actually broke down the Mark Houck story. He actually went went through the entire thing and said the Philadelphia prosecutor wouldn't prosecute.
Right.
You know, the Democrat prosecutor. They wouldn't do it.
Right.
That local prosecutors wanted nothing to do with it. And this is where, you know, because they viewed it and they said, okay, this was a threat to his son. And so when the Justice Department told him they were going after, you know, they were going to go after him, he said, well, I'll turn myself in.
Yeah.
Just tell me I'll turn myself in.
Right.
And they didn't do it. They wanted to make the show of the armed people going to his house. And remember, then this went to federal court and to the jury, and as Cotton pointed out, took less than an hour, and the jury found him not guilty of all charges. And it's like, here's what you could see, and there was always a problem with never telling the rioters outside, the protesters outside the justice's home. The problem was, anybody knows this, you simply say, you can't do this. This is against federal law. You need to move or we'll arrest you. And the fact that that wasn't done, and That should have been, you don't sit there and say, oh, okay, well, we'll let the marshals on the ground decide whether to enforce federal law. And if they don't wish to follow it, that's fine. You're the attorney general. These are, this was a leak unprecedented in the Supreme Court, unprecedented. The protesters at their house, the doxing of the Supreme Court justices, absolutely against federal law. You should have laid down the law and said either leave now or every one of you is arrested.
Well,
and they didn't do that.
In one sentence, he's defending the countless men and women of the Department of Justice. And then he's throwing them under the bus saying, well, the marshals need to do that basically on the ground.
Yeah, right.
They need to start. Well, they're not responsible for prosecution. Yeah, and Tom Cotton also later broke it down as to how easy it is in terms of finding the individuals. Because their social media is filled with it.
Right.
And that's how the Department of Justice found people that were involved on January 6th. They spent countless man hours on that, and they didn't pursue anybody who was involved in the protest outside of the homes of the justices. This is very clear cut, and I think it was a very good job of Ted Cruz. I think Cotton and I think Blackburn and others did even a very good job.
Grassley actually did.
Yeah, right.
In his own slow way.
Well, he is.
Deliberative way.
He's a slow talker, but if you listen to what he's saying, he made some very good points as well. And the demonstrations of that and the facts with Garland up there basically not answering the question, it's ridiculous. I'm sorry, U.S. Marshals don't decide prosecution. They don't do that, and you know that, and you can go out. You've demonstrated that clearly when it comes to something that is on your agenda list, that you can go out and pursue what you want to pursue, and then you're just letting other things slide. That is not justice.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, the San Francisco City Council complaining that if they have to pay $5 million in reparation, they can't have a government and do that. There isn't the money.
Oh, they need the money to hand out money. Yeah. Oh.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. Listen to when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight.
And thank you.
Yes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, here's a headline.
Okay.
San Francisco's Woke Reparations Committee sparks fury as it reveals how it calculated the controversial $5 million payout it wants to give every eligible black resident. They admitted they did not use a mathematical formula to calculate the amount.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And did you... it just wasn't the $5 million. Did you see? It wasn't just the $5 million that they're planning. It's $5 million plus complete debt forgiveness and a guaranteed income of $97,000 a year.
Oh, okay, because I thought it was going to be something unreasonable.
The story's out yesterday. We can't afford this. What are you talking about? Use the marijuana tax.
Hey, the marijuana, legalize it and tax it.
It's like the marijuana tax raises $10 million a year, and it's going down. That's
yeah.
Now, the goal of San Francisco, do you remember that the experts said that because of the liberal policies in San Francisco, that it will soon be the whitest city in America.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the goal.
They can
make it because it's so expensive. No blacks, no whites, nobody will live there. So there'll be no reparations to pay. Because nobody can afford to live in San Francisco.
Right.
City supervisors claim the proposal is unrealistic.
Claim the proposal is unrealistic? Well, according to their claim,
Supervisor Hillary Ronan told the San Francisco Chronicle, "I wish we had this kind of money in San Francisco's general fund, but if we want to maintain the services that exist today, we do not."
Uh-huh.
Supervisor Shimon Walton had authored the resolution in 2020 for the city to study harm done to the city's African-American community, told the outlet that some city residents suggested using revenue from the city's cannabis business tax to help fund the reparations, despite the tax having been suspended for years and would not even come close to covering the $5 million per person.
Not even
price tag,
close.
Plus complete debt forgiveness, plus $97,000 a year.
Not even close. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. According to the San Francisco Standard, the board and members of the public were scheduled to discuss the committee's plan to implement reparations, but Walton told the outlet that he went to Colombia for a birthday trip with friends, but his flight home has been delayed. He also deleted a picture from his Instagram taken at a Hooters restaurant in Medellin.
Oh.
So, I don't know what that has to do with any of this.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how does that fit in?
But they put it in the article anyway, and I'm sorry.
Hey, by the way, he was at Hooters, and
he was at Hooters.
The photo. Okay.
I mean, what's the question?
What is that?
Can you not be for reparations and go to Hooters? I mean, I don't, in
right.
Colombia.
Right. Is it illegal to go to a Hooters in Colombia?
I'm not.
Look, I don't know a lot about foreign law. I just, don't know how that fits in.
Now, those wishing to make a claim under the program are required to prove at least 2 of 8 criteria, choosing from a list that includes born in San Francisco between 1940 and 1996, has proof of residency in San Francisco for at least 13 years. My God, that's discriminatory. And or personally or the direct descendant of someone incarcerated by the failed war on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a former cocaine dealer, you can get $5 million plus $97,000 a year in guaranteed income and all debt forgiveness. Does the debt forgiveness, if you're a cocaine dealer, include what the IRS will be collecting from you from the next 100,000 years for not reporting your income?
Right. How much forgiveness are we talking about here? Wow.
Oh, my, that's just, I'm sorry, that's funny.
Well,
all of a sudden, the delusional mindset has come up against,
well,
here again, another liberal nirvana program has hit the crossroads of Reality Street.
Well, and again, we ask the question, what about other minorities? How will they be treated? And how do you answer the question, what about reparations for how we have been treated as minorities in this city? Is that not a valid question? It has to be.
Yes.
So, you know, I love this. Well, we didn't really do the math. What did you think the payout was going to be? I mean, certainly in your mind, you had a rough estimate. When you talk in terms of giving people $5 million each, then certainly you've done simple math.
William Darity Jr., an economist who supports reparations, by the way, this is the perfect liberal circular firing squad again. Yeah. I mean, this is just perfect. William Darity, an economist who supports reparations, even slammed the high price number, saying the payout needs to be somewhat realistic. Calling for $5 million payout by a local government undercuts the credibility of the reparations effort.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
It is unclear how many people in San Francisco will be eligible, but the city is home to roughly 50,000 African Americans. If each resident qualified, it would take up a huge amount of the annual budget, still recovering from the pandemic. To qualify, now this is really interesting. To qualify, residents need to have identified as black. Now, does this mean if Rachel Dolezal has lived
in San Francisco for the proper amount of time, yeah, whatever is...
And at least be 18 years old.
Now, so are we still putting the qualifiers on whether or not they have lived in San Francisco for a set amount of time? Because that's kind of gone back and forth. You know, we want people to come here, come back to California. So...
Well, there's been a few plans.
Right.
You know, that the San Francisco plan wasn't that, the other plan that had come up. I think that was in, were they talking about that in Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
That the reparations program should not be limited to state residents because people are moving because the cost of living is so high.
They're leaving the state.
They're leaving the state. So the goal should be to pay people to come back into the state.
Yeah.
Because we had suggested the overall plan for... We thought the Red Eye Radio plan was the best plan.
Mm-hmm.
$5 million to each eligible person,
mm-hmm,
$97,000 a year,
mm-hmm,
in unlimited pay,
mm-hmm,
all debt forgiveness.
Yeah.
And it should apply across the board in California.
Yeah.
That would seem to be fair. Excuse me. Quote, fair, end of quote.
Yes. We're not saying it's fair.
Yes.
It's what they deem,
yes,
as fair. Now,
we believe in federalism where states should be able to make these decisions. On top of this, after the reparations, double free health care for everyone. Whatever the hospital bill is, you double that.
You make a payment to the hospital and to the patient.
And to the patient.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Why? Yeah. Because you're California and you have unlimited wealth.
Ah, because, Gary, it's the right thing to do.
Because it's the right thing to do. Free food for everyone, including Surfer Boy.
Yes.
Whatever happened to him? I'm going to go look and see whatever happened to Surfer. Remember Sean?
Well, I don't know, but that whatever he was getting, what was it, $200-$300 a month?
Yeah.
Man, with inflation.
Yeah, it's nothing now.
it's nothing.
And look whatever happened to... Remember when he went on Hannity?
Yeah.
Hannity said,
I can get you a job right now.
For like $80,000,
right,
driving a truck. No, it's okay. I want to be beach bum and collect.
Yeah. I want to play in my band. Maybe his band is touring.
Oh, I remember a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. I think I mentioned this on the air. I actually heard some recordings of the band.
Mm.
It wasn't bad.
Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, okay.
All right.
I figured it was going to be more, you know, like Surfer. I don't know. I expected a couple of gnarlies in there,
right,
or whatever. But
yeah.
But yeah, remember, I'd never forget when he was on Hannity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like.
No, he's being offered a job and it's like, no, I don't want a job.
I don't want a job.
But with inflation, I bet he's.
And now he's in the mainstream.
No, he was quiet quitting before anybody knew what quiet quitting was. He didn't even have anything to quiet quit from. He was quiet quitting a job he didn't have.
Now, he was interviewed like on some national show, right?
Mm.
Isn't that some news show? That's how he became. And then
was it that? Yeah. It wasn't like a Dr. Phil, was it?
I can't remember.
Yeah. But with inflation, he's probably having to live on two couches now. How many friends or family members are supporting him now? Probably taking two or three more people.
Yeah, try to see where. I can't remember what his name was.
Yeah.
I'll have to look. Okay. All right. Peasley. What's his name? Peasley. Says right here, Fox LA, whatever happened to Surfer Dude? Some 15 years later, you want to know what happened to Surfer Dude with so many people around the world to recognize? Still surfing now with 35-year-old husband and father who has capitalized on his internet fame with a business opportunity called Get Pitted Surf and Snow.
Okay. They said that, 15 years that later? 15, that wasn't 15
That
years
wasn't the same guy.
That's not the same guy.
No, it's not the same guy.
Yeah, because in California, there are millions of surfer dudes. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not him.
That's not the guy that was on Hannity.
No, but.
Because that was like seven years ago, right?
For this surfer dude, congratulations. You did it.
You become a productive.
You did it.
Member of society.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did see an interview with Laird Hamilton.
Hmm.
You know, about, and what's his wife's name? Gabrielle Reese?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she was talking about being married to a surfer. But he cashed out.
Yeah. That's a whole different level.
He wasn't a surfer dude. He was a professional surfer and one of the, probably one of the best ever.
Yeah, you could easily, probably. I think you could
make
easily
that argument,
say that.
The best ever,
you could definitely make that argument.
So he is... He has a couple of million.
Yeah. Got a little bit. Yeah.
All right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on compliance, safety, accountability. At the core of compliance, safety, accountability, or CSA, is FMCSA's Safety Measurement System, or SMS. The SMS uses seven safety improvement categories called basics to examine a carrier's on-road performance and potential crash risk. The categories of basics are unsafe driving, hours of service compliance, driver fitness, controlled substances and alcohol, vehicle maintenance, hazardous materials compliance, and crash indicator. Under FMCSA's old measurement system, carrier performance was assessed in only four broad categories. Violations or crashes that have occurred within the previous 24 months of performance data are included in CSA calculations, but more recent events are weighted more heavily than older events. Violations or crashes that have happened within the past 6 months are weighted 33% more than events that occurred 6 to 12 months ago. And violations that are older than a year are weighted 66% less than recent violations. This allows a carrier to improve their CSA score gradually as they see fewer and fewer violations. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, I did do a little background. His name was Jesse Green Slate.
Yeah. Okay.
And he was found, Jesse Waters, when he worked for O'Reilly.
Mm.
Was in California for some reason and found him at a grocery store.
Yeah.
And that's how he became famous.
Right.
And he was buying lobster with his food stamps.
Mm.
And remember, he was just hanging around. And then
Hannity
brought him on afterwards.
Right.
Last, they did check in with him a year later, but I don't think anybody's heard from him. And I just went. He was on Facebook a couple of years ago because I think we talked about it. I went on Facebook. I can't find him on Facebook. Mm. So he's sort of disappeared. Nobody. He hasn't really been around.
Well, hopefully he's okay.
Yeah, nobody's heard of. I mean, he hasn't made the news since like 2016. That was like 2014.
It's crazy.
O'Reilly still had a show.
Yeah. Yeah. So. That's crazy.
But that's where that... So there it is. But yeah. I had not much on Google at all from him. Got to bring this story because this is one I love because this is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Starbucks office workers drafted a letter to management on Wednesday as executives mandated a reduction in remote work opportunities. Employees within commuting distance of the company's Seattle headquarters must travel to the office on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and a third day determined by their teams, according to a memo seen by CNBC earlier this year. Can you believe this is like a story with like urgency? According to a memo seen by CNBC earlier this year, several dozen office workers created a petition asserting that the firm would diminish productivity and violate trust with employees due to the change. This behavior of not listening to partners has impacted us. The support partners, an unforeseen and poorly planned return to office mandate is making our lives more difficult. Prioritizing corporate control over productivity, diversity, and inclusion. That's now come into it now.
Mm-hmm.
And individual job satisfaction. Our mission of serving one cup, one person, and one neighborhood at a time is explicitly ignored when corporate policies attempt to eliminate the individuality of our partners and our stores.
Uh-huh.
The petition added, morale is at an all-time low.
Oh, okay. All right.
And get a word in edgewise. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, this is interesting. Biden's going to pull out his first veto pen. The Senate votes to block the Biden rule allowing retirement fund managers to prioritize social. We wish to pressure you. Into doing basically liberal social justice.
Yeah.
We want you to only invest in liberal social justice.
Yeah.
And of course, a company's responsibility, fiduciary responsibility, is to their stockholders and their investors.
Right.
That's what it's supposed to be.
Right.
We talked yesterday about Vanguard pulling out, saying, sorry, we're not going to do this anymore. Vanguard said, we're done with this, and more. I'm reading this. This is, and by the way, the Senate and the House both voted against the executive order by the president to encourage, your retirement funds to not go in oil, natural gas. It's doing great, as an example, but in alternative forms of energy,
right,
which are simply guided by government subsidies.
Right.
So that can go up and down depending on what. But you don't have to worry about, you know, your investors and the return in investment for future retirees worry about social justice and saving the planet.
Right.
This is sort of like, and we had talked about this yesterday, this is really like what is going on a number of different issues. I forgot what I was going to say. I had a whole thing all set up and it just popped out of my mind here.
Well, the idea of forcing this wokeness on and agenda into capitalism. It's nothing new to see corporations say, well, we have our policy is to be earth friendly. That's a marketing thing that they do. A lot of companies will do that as a matter of practice. It's different. This is activism saying, essentially, we're going to target you if you don't get on board.
This is like the follow up. I remember what I want to say now to the whole Black Lives Matter and companies getting involved in that and getting burned big time.
Right.
And it's like, companies, you ever going to wake up? You ever going to wake? And I mean, the asinine thing that Major League Baseball did, enabling the race baiting of the Democratic Party and the lies of the Democratic Party on the Georgia election law, where now Democrats are saying, come on in, come on, come on in. Let's have the Democratic National Convention in Atlanta. Wait a minute. That Jim Crow law is in effect that moved Major League Baseball. OK, never mind, we were lying about that. Mm-hmm. And they lied about it. They lied about it to cause racial division and racial hatred based on a lie. They did what KKK leaders used to do. That's what the Biden administration did. And every single mainstream Democrat who didn't object to what was going on there, they lied about the Georgia election bill to create hatred among the races.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's reprehensible what they did. And companies got burned on the same thing from Black Lives Matter. Now, nobody wants to be associated with Black Lives Matter.
Right.
All these companies, oh, what do you mean? They've all bailed.
Yeah.
Before, they were genuflecting at the altar of Black Lives Matter. Not anymore.
Nope.
And so I think companies are now starting to learn. And you know, you had Vanguard say, oh, I don't know about this. And this from the Financial Times. Listen to this article that came out on the 28th. Wall Street's largest asset managers, private equity firms, and brokers have warned that a backlash against sustainable investing is now a material risk.
Yeah.
In filings that show how anger over ESG principles has become a perceived threat to profits. A dozen big U.S. financial companies, including BlackRock, Blackstone, KKR, and T. Rowe Price, added language to annual reports filed in the past month, cautioning that pressures such as divergent views or competing demands, end of quote, on environmental, social, and governance investing could hurt financial performance.
You don't say.
The statements come in response to a campaign against what opponents call as woke capitalism that has drawn support from such high-profile Republican politicians as Mitch McConnell and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Because it's ridiculous. The focus of any organization, you know, you go to put your 401k in, everybody wants the focus to be on profits. How do we know? We know this because a couple of years ago, remember when Exxon met in Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
Never forget, you and I were working together. And there was a group inside that said, we want to be much more climate friendly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our whole goal has to be to eventually get rid of oil.
Activist investors. Yeah.
Yes. Activist investors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. These are active. This was really sort of the beginning of ESG, mm-hmm. where you saw this happening, these activist investors.
Mm-hmm.
They had to drop it because some of the biggest objection came from New York City pension funds that were invested in oil.
Yeah.
And they said, this is about people's future retirement and their pensions. The only thing that matters is profit so they can retire.
You have an obligation.
You have an obligation. Yep.
And those are the things. But the left is good at building that jealousy and envy. And then you get to, you know, the where you're clashing with a union and union pensions. And it's like, okay, now we can shut up about it. The fact of the matter is, you do have an obligation. And there are standards that corporations are expected to practice. But when you get into this activist mode, it goes far beyond that. Because the idea really is to change the priority away from profits.
Yeah.
Then you're not a business. If you're doing it for a cause, then you shouldn't focus, and you're not going to focus on profit. That's called non-profit. And there's a place for that in society. Go be a part of that. And corporations can make contributions along the way. They support a lot of non-profits. In fact, you know what's interesting is that without the profits, then we don't have the, remember, Obama, you didn't build that. Actually, we built that too.
Yeah.
When he said, you didn't build this small business, the bridges and the roads were built by the government. The government gets nothing unless there's a profit. So we built the bridges and the roads and the business. Thank you, Mr. President.
On the profits of companies and individuals.
And the same thing with nonprofits. Without profits,
there are no nonprofits.
There are no nonprofits. There are no funded causes.
Again, you know, we talked about the political ignorance, for example, and again, how the latest poll shows that Annenberg does it every couple of years, that 56% of people don't know the three branches of government.
Mm-hmm.
That's and so when there's a Supreme Court thing going on here, and people say, well, we don't like what the Supreme Court's doing, and it's like just over 50% don't trust the Supreme Court. Well, just over 50% have no idea why the Supreme Court even exists.
Right.
I wonder if the number of those, how many of those people that have no idea what the three branches of government are even understand why the Supreme Court exists. And we have economic illiteracy and ignorance, too.
Mm-hmm.
People have no idea how economies work.
Right.
They have no idea how economics works. They come up with a little thing in their mind. You know, they connect one dot. Oh, let's raise everybody who raises to $20, $25 an hour. All right. And then you have more money, and then you spend it, and then the economy improves. Okay. No, there's more to it. No, I'm stopping there. Don't give me any more. It's mm-hmm. the entire thing we're dealing with right now on loan forgiveness. They lied about it. It's loan forgiveness. We had a father who called this week. His son is a lawyer and believes that his loan should be forgiven, and his father asked him. It was a great call we had earlier. Well, who do you think is going to pay for it? Well, nobody. It's forgiven.
Right.
In a minute, we've got economic ignorance all over the place.
It just disappears.
Just disappears. They just write, as Kramer said, they just write it off.
Mm-hmm.
It just disappears. There are no consequences to it whatsoever. And that's what, you know, that's part of the problem. We're all doing nice things here. And the CEO from Vanguard laid it out really precise. He said, if you're in an investment group, you know, your whole goal should be what's going to make me a profit.
Yeah.
That's it. If you start.
The only reason you're there.
Yeah. If you start basing your investment strategy on the policies of government and regulators, you're screwed.
Again, if it's for a cause and not about profits,
right.
If profits are the last thing you're worried about and the cause is the first thing you're worried about, then you're talking about a nonprofit. You're in the wrong arena.
Now everybody is scared to death. The thing is, well, now all of these investment groups and firms and companies that are, you know, want to do the ESG, they're afraid now that these other investment groups are now pulling out, saying we're not going to do it. They're going to be able to gain all the funding, and we can't get the funding we need.
Yeah,
duh.
Right.
Well.
How do you think it works?
What's happening is here, these people are telling the public the reality of it, that, hey, we'll make you a profit, because here's what our goal is, to make you a profit. These people are saying, put your money with us and we'll be nice.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are putting it where they can get the profit.
Right.
Economics is starting to interfere with this. There's an incentive on this end, no incentive on this end. Economic incentive.
And that's the thing, is that what they want you to believe is that you can have both. And that you should have both. That you can have your activism and your profits, and the profits won't be affected by the activism. Well, the fact of the matter is, you can't. You can't have both. It will affect the profits. And when you try and slice it up, what it comes down to really is the true activist wants the profits to be depleted.
Look at this here. The disclosures follow several years of money managers when they began adding language to annual reports about the financial risks mm-hmm. posed by pro-ESG advocates. Well, duh!
It's yeah. Well, where do you think it's going to go?
What idiots. We're not worried about the profit margin, and that company is... And that could hurt us because we're not investing in things that will make us more money, and they are. That could be a problem that we need to discuss.
Yeah. I mean,
why, you idiot? I'm sorry. Well, you're an idiot.
You know, and that's it. I mean, it really comes down to it. The goal is about what? E should be for efficiency. And S should be for stability. G should be for goal-driven. That's the planning. That's the business planning that gets you to profits and sustainable profits. You know, you hear so much in the echo chamber that is social media. Well, we're striving for sustainable and sustainable and sustainable when they talk about whatever product they're talking about. When it comes to investments, sustainable should be related and right in front of growth.
Yeah, but they never talk about having a sustainable economy.
No. Yeah, that's my point. Sustainable should be in front of growth. Sustainable right. growth for a company. And then if you want to take your profits and put them toward your cause,
go do it.
Please go do it. That's your right to do so.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Progressive Commercial Insurance protects...
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, I really don't know what effect the Biden executive order encouraging companies to practice ESG is actually going to have. He's going to veto the bill today. By the way, the bipartisan bill to nix the executive order from Biden. The thing is, though, all the publicity on this, you see it over the last couple of days especially. You've got now there's more news on ESG and how companies are saying this isn't good.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy, game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.